fighting for America.
Republicans should stop holding our Homeland Security hostage.
The president needs to listen to the American people and say, yes, let's build the Keystone Pipeline.
Fighting for Idaho.
What we are teaching young people right now is if you love someone, beat the heck out of them. If you love someone, choke them, whip them, torture them.
Fighting for you.
Brian Williams. It's almost as if the libs are reluctantly carrying the water on this story.
Well, what are you talking about? He cured cancer and landed on the moon.
Boise's Mr. Right. Kevin Miller in the morning.
How can you criticize somebody that did these things?
Right.
Winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Hi-de-ho, welcome to Friday. K. Millie in the morning, the Treasure Valley Cherub, the day before Valentine's Day. Joining us now from FAIR, our great friend, Bob Dane, Communications Director, Federation for American Immigration Reform. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. I was just sitting here looking at more exaggerations from Brian Williams, the story that keeps going on and on. You know, I figure he's got the perfect job, given his creative deception. He should become the new White House spokesperson. What do you think?
Well, between that and that BuzzFeed video, man.
It's either that or he goes back to Paducah and starts doing the weather forecast early mornings.
Well, as someone who has lived in this field for many, many years and has so much experience dealing with people both sides of the microphone, Bob, what do you make of Brian Williams there?
You know, I think you get to power corrupts absolutely. I think over a period of time, whether you're a media figure or whether you're a politician, you begin to play fast and loose with the rules because you're just surrounded by sycophants and you have nothing but affirmation. You're compelled with ratings, and it's like the king is wearing no clothes. Nobody ever gives you the negative feedback. Hey, Brian, maybe scale it back, huh? Let's get a little more factual. Could have used a little bit more of that, I think, through the end of the career.
Well, they were talking about that apparently that Tim Russert and Tom Brokaw had a all-in approach, and they would allow people. And, of course, allowing criticism or critiques is certainly not, you know, like an air check you're going to get. You're only going to go so far, but you were either in Brian's camp or you weren't in this case.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons that I, you know, personally prefer, just love talk radio, because it is not an agenda setting. It does not have an agenda. It simply has as its core function, that is talk radio, the representation of Americans whose voices have been disenfranchised. And, you know, just I don't think we see that issue ever more compelling than in talk radio. I mean, and immigration, for example, getting our borders secured, our laws enforced, and our immigration policy serving a broad national interest. That would be impossible without talk radio and the listeners you represent. I mean, the deck is stacked on the other side by the mainstream media, by the NBCs and the Brian Williams, Wall Street, the Chamber of Commerce, the churches, the schools, the unions even, all of the Democratic Party, which, by the way, Kevin, you know, the Democrat Party, through most of the last century, used to protect American workers from massive foreign labor. And then you've got a large block of the GOP leadership. I mean, you know, you throw in the huge money from the Matt Zuckerberg and George Soros and the Ford Foundation, and the odds are overwhelming on a lot of these issues that we're all concerned about, that the nightly newscast aren't concerned about, except for one thing. Guess what? We have the majority of the public on our side, and those folks are the people who listen to you every day. I mean, you and we, all of us, we're the last line of defense between the rule of law and complete lawlessness, at least on immigration.
Well, Bob, that's why we love your group. It scares me when I hear that even though the majority of the folks, the overwhelming majority of the folks want, no amnesty, want to make sure that American jobs, American sovereignty is protected, you still have, you know, what to expect from the Democrats, but Republicans still trying to make an immigration deal.
Yeah, they are. Several weeks ago, the House of Republicans passed the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Bill. They fully funded that department, but they included language that says the president cannot use any of that money within DHS to carry out an amnesty plan. Congress said, DHS is about protecting the homeland. It is not an amnesty factory for illegal aliens, and they were right. So now that bill is in the Senate. Now, if they pass it, DHS gets the money they need, amnesty is stopped, and the bill is what we call clean. Unfortunately, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is worried that Obama is going to veto it. Well, yeah, the president will veto it, but it will be his fault if DHS doesn't get his funding, not the Republicans.
Although, Bob, and you know this, the press is going to go, those Republicans, they didn't fund DHS. And then you're going to have the weenie Republicans afraid that the press isn't going to like them.
You are correct. First, let's remember, the Republicans passed the budget for the federal government back in December when they had an opportunity to stop amnesty. At the same time, they said, hey, just be patient. We will deal with this executive action in January on the DHS bill. They made us a promise, and we expect them to do it. And the other thing to remember is a clean DHS bill is when amnesty is stripped out and stopped. These are very real national security risks involved when the government is going to be forced to process tens of thousands of illegal alien amnesty applications every week, every day, every hour, without having time to do adequate background checks, you know, just for starters. That issue is relevant to the mission of DHS. So the defunding language enhances our national security. Again, you know, I think Obama has a choice, amnesty or national security. That's the bottom line. I am hearing more and more Republicans beginning to understand how to properly message on this so that Americans understand what they're trying to do and how they're trying to protect them.
Well, what gets me is the code word for Republicans that, you know, we want immigration reform. We need guest workers, which is BS. We can't employ the people that we have here.
Right.
And, you know, they try and, you know, use the lack of critical thinking skills with the American public by saying, well, we need immigration reform. It's fair and all this. And I'm thinking to myself, no, it isn't. You and Senator Sessions appear to be the only ones that understand, hey, the more people we bring in, especially with the low paying jobs, the less Americans are going to be working.
The new Republican Senate and Congress, well, the new Congress has a disturbing number of older Republicans who refuse to really articulate what immigration is all about. You've got a lot of new Republican congressmen and senators who really haven't dealt with the issue. Look, at this point in life, if you're still standing in the middle of the road on this immigration issue, you're going to get run over by voters because the voters want clarity and they want strong, principled positions. And that means no amnesty and more secure borders. And you know, one principle that the Republicans, Walker, for example, has yet to articulate is that immigration is designed to serve our broad national interest, not special interest. That's been the core foundation of what our organization for 36 years has always been about. You've got to have an overarching principle before you develop a position. And that takes courage for a lot of the Republicans, I know, because they're going to have to turn their back on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Wall Street businesses that pad their pocket, and they're going to have to commit to the needs of the American workers and taxpayers first. But you know what? You might be richly rewarded at the polls if you do that. It's called backbone. It's called principle. It's called standing up high and being able to look at yourself in the mirror and saying, hey, maybe some of these special interest groups are going to skewer me, but I've got plenty of voters out there who respect my positions.
Bob Dane joining us here, Kevin Miller in the morning. Bob from Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR. Let's take a look at two groups that shock me, the chamber and the unions. You would think that the unions want to be alive, relevant, and vibrant. They'd come to the defense of the American worker instead of selling them out. And then you have business leaders, business owners saying, hey, we want the cheap labor.
Yeah, the unions, you know, for most of the last century, Democrats and unions and unionized labor, old line union workers, steel workers and mill workers and so forth, were adamantly opposed to massive increases in immigration because they understood that there was a scarcity of jobs that should be morally and ethically reserved for U.S. residents, and they understood that the massive importation of low-skilled labor would degrade wages. So that, you know, you can call that protectionism. You can call it some degree of restriction to foreign labor. But that worked through the better part of the last century, and it created a vibrant middle class. And by the way, that vibrant middle class is really the bedrock of your democracy. If you don't have it, you're in trouble. And what we're now seeing is increasing income inequality, the top and the bottom. The middle is disappearing. Much of that has to do with immigration. By the way, a couple of minutes ago, you alluded to the fact that we have more demand for jobs than we actually do have jobs. Look, we need 150,000 jobs each month just to keep up with new immigrants coming into the jobs market.
Bob Dane joining us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. Another issue that we've been hitting is, believe it or not, that if you're an illegal alien, you could get retroactive tax benefits even if you didn't pay taxes.
Yeah, illegal aliens get to file for tax deductions. There's a variety of them, the earned income tax credit, the additional child tax credits. You know, in a way, given the cost of illegal immigration over the last 30 years, I think we should be able to claim them as dependents. But look, this is exactly what we said would happen. Giving amnesty to millions of illegal aliens are draining us dry. Because you've got the additional cost of extending federal, state, and local benefits to millions of illegal aliens whose new lawful presence, because of Obama's waving of his magic wand, makes them eligible for even more benefits, including tax refunds. Most of these aliens are low-skilled. They are heavily government-dependent. So, of course, they take every possible tax benefit that's possible. Now, this is an interesting dilemma. Because the IRS has encouraged illegal aliens for 20 years now to apply for what is called an ITIN, an individual tax identification number, so that illegal aliens could pay their taxes. An illegal alien can't get a social number, but they can get the ITIN. So the IRS really pushed these. There's about 14 million of them now, used almost exclusively by illegal aliens. The IRS loves it, because they don't really give a hoot about anybody's legal status. They just want their money. As a matter of fact, the IRS commissioner said 2 years ago, if somebody is working without authorization in this country, they're not absolved of tax liability. We want your money whether you're here legally or not and whether you earned it legally or not, close quote. So, you know, the question here is, so if the IRS wants them to pay taxes like everybody else, do we have an obligation to them to give them refunds retroactively, just like you and I can apply for?
Exactly. And then I love the Attorney General going, or the Attorney General nominee, well, you don't really have to be a legal citizen. You don't have to be a legal resident. It doesn't really matter if you're an American. Everybody here has a right to work. Everybody should work.
Well, my personal opinion is, let's not get soft-headed here. Just because some illegal aliens did file taxes, given that they were residing in the U.S. illegally, working illegally, frankly, I consider the taxes they paid rent or a partial down payment on the enormous cost that they've had on the U.S., and I would certainly take off any retroactive tax benefit right off the table. I'm not sure that argument is going to pass the legal test.
Now, let me hit you with this, Bob Dane. Now we're hearing that, you know, published reports coming out that not only are they going to be able to get tax benefits, but with the alleged temporary amnesty, that we could see the illegals voting. And you and I both know that's been going on for years, regardless of the amnesty proposal from the president.
Yeah, that is certainly an inevitability that they will begin voting. Which is not surprising, because if you think about it, ultimately that's what this massive flow of immigration and massive amnesty is all about. Of course we're going to have illegal alien voter fraud. I mean, from the Democrats' perspective, the whole purpose of increasing immigration, giving amnesty, is to expand their voting base. It's not about compassion and humanitarian concerns. Obama, Schumer, and Pelosi, and Gutierrez, they can see that the last four presidential elections were decided by pretty thin margins, 4.5 million voters. So looking ahead, between now and about 2036, we're going to add 15 million new voters immigrants from just from the current level of immigration. These folks are mostly poor, heavily government dependent. They're predisposed to vote for the party of big government. Then add on top of that 5 million illegal aliens who are going to be given amnesty and allowed to bring in their relatives. So the calculus here, Kevin, is that there is a mathematical certainty that unless immigration is reined in, it's the end of the two-party system in America. And that's a serious issue, because any country that has only one party is one step from tyranny. Our Constitution affords checks and balances, but so too does having two-party systems. And without it, we're in real trouble.
Bob, let me hit you with this. That it amazes me that you still have folks in the Republican establishment that listen to the Democrats saying, well, if you want to be in the presidential election, you got to do something about the illegals. And I'm going, you're just in, you know, they don't have your best interest at heart. I mean, just the preservation of the two-party system, as you said, they've got to do something about it. But whether it's the intimidation, whether it's the press, whether it's the Democrats, the Republicans seem to willow away and again, try and pull the Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, it's amazing. On any given day, you can see Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or Luis Gutierrez putting on the hat of the Republican strategist, giving the Republicans all of the advice about how to revitalize their party. You need to be careful about who you take advice from. Look, Republicans need to do two things on immigration at least. First, they need to stop Obama's unconstitutional amnesty. Now, even if some of them might see merit in a limited amnesty, it's got to be done by legislation, not executive fiat. And secondly, and I think before the Republicans do anything more on immigration, again, they need to articulate a policy agenda that has as its centerpiece the idea that immigration is supposed to serve our broad national interest, not special interest. And if they insist on using immigration to serve their political interest, they better understand that amnesty and huge increases in legal immigration is diluting their party as surely as it is helping the Democrats. And the Democrats seem to know that, and the Republicans seem to be clueless.
You know, going old school, you remember our friend Bob Novak, he'd always, smack them with satire and crossfire, going, yes, Congressman, I'm sure we're going to take advice from you. You know, it was just brilliant. I wish we had a statesman like that around.
You know, I think the GOP could probably do a better job of just selling core values, freedom and liberty and small government, low taxes, opportunity and prosperity. It was the old Rutherford B. Hayes. He said, he serves his party best who serves his country best. You know, both parties are consumed with what's best for the party as opposed to what's best for the country. Are we going to see the emergence of a third party? I don't know, but I know that there's a lot of core conservatives, Tea Party conservatives, who voted enthusiastically back in November for a change, a variety of changes, and fast changes. None of them appear to be on the horizon.
More coming up with Bob Day next. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO.
D&B Garden Show with Debbie Cook, Saturday mornings at 10 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Don't forget to go to 580KIDO.com. Watch the video that people are blowing up about the president laughing at everybody about the health exchange costs and such. Bob Dane, have you seen that video yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's the president shooting hoops and having a great time. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, doing the selfies on the stick.
Yeah. As someone who has worked with the highest levels of government, is that presidential?
Well, I know we're moving along here with generations of millennials and new forms of
right.
technology, but can you imagine Harry Truman doing selfies?
Wow. Lyndon Baines Johnson. Bob Dane
well,
with us.
He did a selfie.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, there was that famous Lyndon Baines Johnson picture. What I think of selfies, he was picking up the dog by the ears. What was the name of the dog?
Oof. Well, it wasn't Checkers, that's for sure.
No.
Bob Dane with us, Communications Director, Federation for American Immigration Reform, as we continue on here. Let's get to some other solutions. What about possible lawsuits?
Yeah, lawsuits is an entirely different track. There are options afoot. If Obama will not respect Congress, and again, Congress is trying to strip away some of the money he will use for amnesty, the president may well have to respect the courts. In addition to that budgetary pressure, lawsuits are emerging. You've got 25 states that have joined a class action lawsuit against the president, and their claim is that they have standing and that they would be harmed at the state level because it's the states that are on the hook for the cost of education and health care and other public benefits and law enforcement when illegal immigration continues, which it would in the aftermath of the amnesty. The states claim that it's axiomatic. Well, they're right. Amnesty just fuels the incentive for more and more illegal immigration. Right now, I mean, nationally, the cost of illegal immigration in the United States is $118 billion. $88 million of that is paid for by the states. So I think the states are right. I think history is on their side. That case is now in a federal court in Brownsville, Texas. We could see a ruling on that today, tomorrow, next week. It wouldn't surprise me at all. You could also see the House of Representatives file a lawsuit. Didn't think that would happen a month ago. Boehner seems to have tipped his hand on this recently. The House would make a case. Their case would be under the constitutional authority to regulate immigration. That's been stripped away. And I think they'd be on solid footing under Article 1 of the Constitution, which says that Congress, not the president, gets to establish a uniform rule of law. And I think the House could probably also legitimately claim that Obama violated the Take Care Clause of the U.S. Constitution that limits the scope of the of presidential power. These things have to be done quickly because illegal aliens are already beginning to line up for the amnesty application process, which will be underway in a few short weeks. And the government has already staffed up a veritable amnesty processing center here in the Arlington, Virginia area, the Washington, D.C. suburbs. And once that happens, it's going to be very—I think it's going to be very hard to put the ketchup back in the bottle.
Bob Dane, if people want to get involved and help, what can they do?
Well, they follow us on Twitter at Fair Immigration. Go to the Federation for American Immigration Facebook page. Great stuff up there. Or just go to fairus.org, get involved, and make a difference.
Bob, take care. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Kevin.
Our great friend Bob Dane with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO.
News. Thank you and Mrs. Miller, too.
All right, well, you didn't have to include her.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
Love stinks.
Are your ears burning yet? They should be. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. We go to, well, if I'm the Treasure Valley Cherub, I guess he would be the Idaho Cupid, Tea Party Bob.
Oh, good morning, Kevin. Happy Friday the 13th to you.
Exactly.
You know, I just viewed the YouTube of President Obama. I think he might be auditioning for the Jimmy Kimmel spot once he gets out of office. Now, that YouTube is just about as funny as the 2,700-page Obamacare bill. It would be a lot more funny if it wasn't hurting our country in so many ways.
And you're talking about the video at 580kido.com under the guys, Watch Obama Laugh at You. What did you make of that?
Well, he's still laughing at us. You know, here's a guy who's the president of the United States, lied to the American people about this great health care bill they were putting through, and now he's trying to make a joke out of it. Believe me, it's not funny if you have increased premiums and higher deductibles.
Well, I thought of you when I wrote that line.
Well, I thank you very much. It's nothing like having somebody think of me. Not a lot of people do. You know, he reminds me of the old saying, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. You know, when it's time to be serious, he tries to be funny. When it's time to be funny, he's serious. You know, let's face it, he's a man who's confused and has been since he took office. The only positive thing I look forward to is that we only have another 23 months and 4 days to put up with his antics.
Well, especially when you consider the timing that apparently he was shooting this after the announcement that Kayla Mueller was killed by ISIS.
You know, this man is a tragedy in so many ways. to the American heritage and to the people of the United States. And it's unfortunate that he just doesn't get it. But this is what happens when you elect somebody who doesn't have the resume to hold the office. The man has really had nothing to do with running anything for most of his life, and he still hasn't done anything to run this country for 6 years, as far as I'm concerned. I think if we got a do-over from the 2012 election, he wouldn't be our president. I think people have actually looked back and said, gee, if I only hadn't voted for this man. Unfortunate. We are, again, stuck with him for 23 months and four more days. By the way, thanks a lot for having Senator McKenzie on. I think it was good to catch up on what was happening with the constitutional carry bill.
Well, speaking of which, what do you make of the Internet might be going away, not just for the schools, but for everything? I mean, it's kind of like when Kevin Miller doesn't pay the cable bill. Uh-oh.
Kevin, we talked about this in the newsletter several times. When you do the kinds of things that this administration has done, you have problems, and this is a serious problem. I feel sorry for the kids. Because here now you have the politicians who are not in control anymore because they've lost it to the court.
Do we live in such a great place that we have this shocking story, and I think we have, like, on the front page of the paper, truffles coming and everybody is focused on Valentine's Day? Do we just live in a land of unicorns and rainbows that, even though the news media, I believe, has done a pretty good job of covering this, there's no moment?
No, there is no aha moment, and there never has been. And with the media that we have here in Idaho, I don't think there ever will be. Very few people want to cover the shenanigans that have been going on in the administration. I mean, we've been one of the few.
But you think about the schools and everything else. Okay, how reliant they are on the Internet, not just the schools, but the state agencies. If nothing else, and maybe this is where we both carve our niche, there's got to be some, hey, guys, is this any way to run a state? And as you've brought up several times, sir, the prisons and everything else?
The cronyism and the corruption that goes on at almost every level here in government, and not necessarily by the politicians but by the bureaucrats, but certainly with the aid of the politicians, has been running rampant here for about the last 10 to 12 years, and if it doesn't change soon, we're going to wind up in one hell of a mess. And you can see that just by what's happening now with the Internet and the school connections. A lot of kids are going to be out of luck if they can't take the test. The only good thing will be is that they won't be able to take the SBAC test.
Exactly. Tea Party Bob, we appreciate it. Check out the Gem State Patriot, available at newsstands or on a website or on an Internet browser near you.
And, Kevin, wish Dorothy a happy Valentine's for us.
I will. And do you like being the Idaho Cupid along with the Treasure Valley Cherub? Maybe next year you and I could be dressed up as little cherubs, and we could – might be a little cold, but for the cause of helping others, we could run around and help people.
But, Kevin, I'm going to be so much thinner by then.
Well, you know, I don't know if we can stand a thin cherub or a thin Cupid. Don't worry, I'll make up for both of us.
You have a great weekend, Kevin. Thanks again for all you do.
Thank you, Tea Party Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 8:46. Let's take a listen to this. Before we get to the Internet thing, here we have an interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. By the way, did you see on the Today Show and other places, people asked her if she was asleep at the State of the Union or she was drunk? Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a justice on the Supreme Court.
That there is a constitutional right for same-sex couples to marry, that there are parts of the country that would not be able to accept or would not accept that decision.
I think it's doubtful that it wouldn't be accepted. The change in people's attitudes on that issue has been enormous. In recent years, people have said, this is the way I am. And others looked around, and we discovered it's our next-door neighbor. We're very fond of them. Or it's our child's best friend, or even our child. I think that as more and more people came out and said, this is who I am, and the rest of us recognized that they are one of us, that there was a familiarity with people. It didn't exist in the beginning when the race problem was on the front burner. because we lived in segregated communities. And
apparently, we know her vote on gay marriage.
Ain't no plans with a man. This is the 80s, and I'm down with the ladies.
Ah, the immortal words of that great Western philosopher, Tone Loc. 8:47, you're listening to Kevin Miller in the Morning at 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and Mrs. Miller, too.
All right, well, you didn't have to include her.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
Love stinks.
Are your ears burning yet? They should be. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
That was Desiree Castillo's reaction to a Valentine's Day card ban at her daughter's preschool. Castillo was told the tradition of bringing cards and candies is over.
It's a day of caring giving, and they can't even show that or express that to their classmates. So it was a little upsetting, yeah.
And her daughter Ariana's reaction to the policy, Castillo recorded it. The Valentine's Day drama unfolded this week as Castillo and other parents tried to bring their cards and candy to Sandia Preschool in Apple Valley. The district sent this note to parents telling them not to bring their goodies. The reason? The district claims state guidelines now prevent it.
So really what it comes down to is because we are a licensed state-funded preschool, we have to abide by certain regulations or we're going to lose our license and our funding.
The district says that means they can't accept donations per state rules. We reached out to the State Department of Education to ask about this policy. A spokesperson there seemed baffled when we told them what was going on here at the Apple Valley School District.
Taking it to an extreme, it's Valentine's Day. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't.
Parents passed out their cards anyway outside of campus, and the district says students still had a party in class.
A lot of our teachers did choose to have Valentine's Day crafts and make cards within their classroom with the resources that we had from within.
The school district says this policy only applies to the preschool because funding comes from a different source for K through 12. Reporting from Apple Valley, I'm Tom Waite, CBS 2 News.
There you have it, out of California, from our friends at CBS LA. And how many of you sitting back going, well, that's why we live in Idaho? You know, speaking of Idaho, we have such a great state, such incredible challenges. And I'm just sitting here just looking at some of the stories that we've gone over this week. The idea that we should pay for not only kindergarten, but pre-kindergarten, and that other states are doing this. And I'm thinking, we have school districts in the state where they don't have certified teachers. And we're talking about funding another government program. When are we going to look at things, and when you have a child, is it the state's responsibility to provide child care, or is it your responsibility? You know, I'm always inspired by a story of a young lady I knew in North Carolina that had a daughter, and either, I believe she was divorced, and every day that kid went to daycare that lady had to pay for, and it was just her and her daughter against the world. She didn't look for a government handout. She worked in a low-paying job, made a great career of it. Her kid, I think, went to college, maybe got married by now. But she always went back to those early days where she had to find a solution. Look, nobody wants a child to be without things. But the idea of pre-kindergarten education for kids, I mean, isn't that what preschool is about? Isn't that what child care is about? And then I love the education advocates. Oh, Nelly! We're going to fall behind. That's why our test scores aren't what they should be, because we aren't funding pre-kindergarten. By the way, a couple clips to make you smile.
And Neil Smith, an old buddy, are you here, Neil? Neil, I miss you, man. I miss you.
There you have it, an old butt buddy from the vice president.
And Neil Smith, an old butt buddy. Are you here, Neil? Neil, I miss you, man. I miss you.
When's the last time you heard the term butt buddy? Hey, now. Also, the president has a message for you this Valentine's Day.
Mr. President?
Can I live?
You do you.
If you'd like to see that video, 580kido.com, under the title, Obama Laughs at You. It's all about the president kind of living the good life at our expense when we're talking about the health care, how he's selling health care, never mind that we all have to pay for it. It is 858, 38 degrees. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO.
Mr. President?
Can I live?
No. Hey, it's your world. We're all living in it. Hey, have a happy Valentine's Day. Have a happy Single Awareness Day. Appreciate you listening. Tell a friend. We'd love to be here for many more years. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith.